Good morning, happy 4th, welcome to the CU Podcast, a day early, the 4th of July, 2022. That's Ian. I'm Pat.
It's me.
Otherwise, you raise your hands if you're sure.
Right here.
You must be sure. On the show today, we'll be talking about someone who really loves F-Zero. We're talking about, you okay with your back, Ian?
A big stretch.
A big cat stretch?
Big cat stretch.
Cyberpunk 2077 bugs and what happened there. The EA tweet from hell, the Atari 50th anniversary celebration collection, a new NFT console, and more.
The shit never stops.
We talked with spoilers about Stranger Things season 4 mostly, and Ian talked about a few things, mostly me rambling, on the exclusive Patreon CU Podcast, CUpodcast.com. No, it's not CPodcast. It's patreon.com/CUpodcast. I screwed it up. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I had a busy weekend. I talked about organizing some records on the bonus bit.
The bonus.
Went and played a little pinball last night. I had some plans fall through and decided to get out of the house. Vonnie was at doing Night Zoo with one of her her friend Karen.
Night Zoo is the best zoo.
It's so cool. And she got really good pictures. There was I'm bummed I didn't go. There was two elephants and they were playing with each other and their tusks or their
trunks
were all intertwined and stuff. Cool. Yeah. So she got really good pictures of them being super active.
That's cool.
So I went and played pinball at Harbor Town Pub, local place, probably the place I've played the most pinball at. And I like the food there. I like the bartenders.
Food's pretty good.
They're really nice.
Good nachos.
Yeah, good nachos. Pulled pork nachos are overdone, but they do a good one. But my problem there is it's a bar, and I don't expect there to be kids, but there's always fucking kids running around at Harbor Town.
What do you think that is? Is it the area or the?
I think it's the area, and it's like the one place where shitty parents think they can go drop their kids off in the back room, and then they go drink. I mean, that's what
even though it's not like a traditional arcade, it's mostly pinball.
It's pinball.
Yeah.
So they give their screaming kids money and then the kids put the money in the pinball machine and then they literally like flip the balls and then stand there banging the glass. Like it's just, and no one ever does anything.
They
about
bang
it.
The glass. What are they? Three? How old are these kids?
Oh, some of them are like 8.
I could play pinball when I was 8. I wasn't doing that shit.
No one fucking takes care of their goddamn kids in this bar,
man.
And I'm playing and the kids yesterday weren't like too bad, but they kept like crowding me when I was playing to try to watch. And I get pretty active, so like I'm hip checking these fucking kids in the head, and I'm not trying to because they're small and they're like sneaking up on me, and I'm wiggling. I'm like, fuck,
you're wiggling. You're wiggling pinball moves. I've seen you. You get the gyrations going. You're Elvis.
Yes.
You're going there.
So anyway, one of the game ends and this little girl who I am not kidding you cannot be more than 6 years old.
Okay.
I end the game. I pick up my beer. I take a drink. I put it in the cup holder and I feel this little poke and I turn and the girl looks at me and goes, "I drink beer too," and turns around and walks away.
What?
So
wait a second.
Yeah.
Was she smiling or matter-of-factly saying it?
Matter-of-factly saying it.
I drink beer too.
She was like, "I drink beer too." Or she goes, "You know what?" And I said, "What?" And she goes, "I drink beer too." And she turns around and walks away. So
wow.
Anyways, when I first got there, the kids weren't like super annoying and the score-based replays were low enough that I was winning some free games.
Uh-huh.
And in an effort to get them to stop like harassing, like screaming at their parents for more money, I was like, there's a free game there. It was a free game. Then,
you started to just mine it.
So I was giving away. Well, no, I wasn't putting money in, but like as I won the free game, I was like, you can play my free game, you can play my free game.
To get them away from you. You're sacrificing your free game.
Yeah, I was sacrificing my free game so I could fucking focus on the game.
Ian Pinball Penny Bags.
And
Money Bags Penny.
So they all go sit down and eat after this girl tells me about beer. And then she comes back. She comes back and pokes me again, and I look, and she goes, can you rent me more free games? Like sassily.
I think this girl's just messing with you.
Sassily. I think she's six. No, she just doesn't have parents who know how to take care of her. She comes up to me, she's like, can you win me more free games? And I was like,
at any point, do you want to just go over to the parents and be like, can I talk to your parents for like a minute just to like say, hey, she told me she brings beer? Not to drop a dime on a six-year-old, but a six-year-old should be drinking beer. If it's true.
She was just lying, but it was very weird. Anyways, I have done that to parents before. There was a kid like a week ago that I was playing there. And literally, whenever he'd drain a ball, and I'm talking, it's like a 7, 8, 9-year-old, he would go, and start hitting the glass. And I walked over to one of the parents and I said, if he breaks that, that's going to cost you about $1,000, which is a lie. The tempered glass is probably about $300. But
you want to get the point across.
I want to get the fucking point across that this is expensive shit. And he was all like pissed and then like at me for saying it and then walked over and was like, hey, don't do that to the kid.
See, I would have told the proprietor about that, then they would go over to the parents.
There's no fucking proprietor. I feel like I don't know.
People that work there. What do you mean?
Well, there's not a whole lot they can do. They try, but then that's their tips. Okay. It's tough. Service industry fucking sucks. It's tough to yell at their kids and then expect to get a tip. And that's
do you really think they're strong enough to break the glass?
I don't fucking care.
With a little.
I don't give a shit. I don't want to listen to a fucking little shit kid fucking bang on glass and scream at the machine because no one's ever fucking disciplined their goddamn child.
Aren't kids great?
No, that's why I don't have any. I don't mind kids. I just don't.
Good kids are great.
Good kids are
bad. Kids are the worst.
Exactly.
I think that's how
kids are cool. I like hanging out like good kids. My nieces, nephews, yes, like, awesome. But
either kids are either bad seeds sometimes or. The parents don't parent, and that's what you end up
with. This place is definitely like known as a dumping ground for kids.
It's known as a dumping ground. Kids for parents just want to get drunk.
Rarely do I ever see a parent who pays attention to their child after they walk in. They walk in, hand them the money, and then they disappear.
Give me 4 Jack and Cokes, and give the kid $3 and go to the back. Man.
Whew. Anyway, Nintendo fan, this is a good one. I have friends like this too who love F-Zero. A Nintendo fan spent $40,000 buying stock. This is a Nintendo fan in Japan. He spent 5.6 million Japanese yen or over $40,000 on Nintendo shares for one stock unit. I don't know what a stock unit means, but
okay.
I'm assuming it means enough to get in on an investor call.
Or you can dial in and talk to them.
Yeah, and the fan asked Shuntaro Furukawa, the president of Nintendo, whether the company had considered relaunching some fan favorite games franchises, specifically F-Zero, which was a racing game series that hasn't had a new entry since 2004.
It's 100 shares is one stock, according to this. 100.
The fan who is based in Japan. Oh, so maybe they are. Maybe they're American and used an online translator to communicate. Told Insider over Twitter direct messages that he bought 100 shares in February. He bought 100 shares at 56,430 yen a share in February after selling his stock at another company. He wishes to remain anonymous for privacy, but he says he's a diehard Nintendo fan. So, yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Well, that's one way to do it. I guess you've got the money.
I mean, we've brought this up probably 5 times the past couple years. Mm-hmm. We talked about what IP should Nintendo bring up. That was a top. We're like, F-Zero sitting right there. It was popular enough that they got 3 games and an expansion on the N64. So 3.5 games they got out of this.
There's 2 GBA games too.
Oh, if you can't. Okay. So it's like 5. So like, what the hell are they doing? Why has it been like 15 years that we haven't seen anything? Like, what's happening here? And I always said at the time that they did some math in their head and was like, well, we already have a racing franchise.
Yeah.
So why do this? Even though they're different franchises. F-Zero is pure racing. It's not a party battle racer. It's pure racing. So there's room for both. Yeah. There's room for both. There are different sets of fans, and you can play and you can buy both. It's not like you buy one or the other.
Yeah,
they fulfill different.
But I
needs.
Also agreed. I feel like Nintendo feels like it's silly to do two racing franchises, and I think that's why it's been so long. Because the last F-Zero, the GameCube one, was critically acclaimed. I mean, yeah. It was a very good game. I mean, if the common complaint was that it was too hardcore of a game. Like, it's very, very difficult.
And it sold a lot.
Yeah.
It was a million seller, I believe.
Then they did a fucking... I don't think was.
Was it?
I don't think it was, because that game's pretty hard. It's harder to come by on the GameCube.
Oh, harder, but it's not like one of
the
most
common games. Yeah, but I don't think it's... Like I said, I don't think it's...
All right, I'll look it up. I believe I have the million seller one, but let me look that up. In my vast GameCube collection of stuff I found at the swap meet over the years. All right, go on, Ian.
Anyway. Furukawa's response was, it is realistically difficult to develop new titles and remakes, including sequels, for every Nintendo game that people request, but we are very grateful and appreciate the expectations our fans have for our games.
They did have a Player's Choice version.
Oh, okay.
So I did re-release it. Yeah, it's common. It's a common game for GameCube. But anyway, so they asked the question, and you get the answer that, you know, we just don't want to do it, basically.
Yeah, we don't have the time. It's not a priority. So
we can't do remakes of all our games, even though they just did Advance Wars. And I would say that F-Zero...
People don't want a remake of F-Zero. They want a sequel.
But like, the point is that you can do something with these properties. I think if they did a remaster of F-Zero, it would still do well. If they didn't just make a whole new game.
GX for... Yeah.
It would do well.
But that's probably a little bit more difficult because that was developed by Sega.
They probably have the rights to the code, right? They probably have all that.
Not necessarily. I mean, they didn't with GoldenEye. You know, I mean, it depending on who your developer is, it's going to make it more difficult. I don't think Sega would be adverse to doing it.
Sega's
but,
taking any money, so.
I mean, that could be part of it.
I'd be shocked if they didn't own the right, the full rights to that, to F-Zero, because that's like, that's sort of like, that's a franchise. GoldenEye wasn't a franchise for them; it was a one-off. You know, that was just something that when Nintendo sometimes happens to publish some games, like they published Mega Man 6 on the NES. That's like just almost like, I don't know what the relationship is when they do that. Like, why do they do that? I don't know. Maybe because just to help out Capcom, or Capcom didn't want to do it. I have no clue.
I mean, my guess is probably Capcom maybe didn't want to bring it over to the US because the NES was on its way out, and Nintendo is like, no, this is popular here, so
we know we can sell some of them.
Yeah.
So we'll give you some of the money. So yeah. So anyway, but no, this is their franchise. They have a character in Smash Brothers that goes back to the original. Like, this is their thing. I don't think this is. You know, I think this would sell well with the proper marketing. I think this, I don't know what the last Punch Out did, but we got a Punch Out on the Wii. I mean, it must have did okay. Okay. I know that's a weirder thing, Punch Out, but F-Zero is just racing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't need like a bunch of lore or anything. It's just
Punch Out is like Fancy Simon. You just remember what
Fancy Simon?
Yeah.
we'll bring Simon up later on in the podcast. Ian's foreshadowing a little bit.
Yeah.
I believe. I've been playing Nintendo games since I was a kid. Among all that, Sense of Speed and F-Zero was the best. And then basically said, "We can't do everything. We can't do everything."
So, moving on.
I mean, Nintendo though keeps things close to the chest. Captain Intro. Moving on. Okay, I'm sorry.
Fire Emblem Heroes makes. I got a lead. Fire Emblem Heroes makes $1 billion fucking dollars.
$1 billion
for Nintendo. That is their mobile game, which I have not touched. But I feel like it's probably got to be one of their. As far as Nintendo,
that's their best one.
Goes not like Pokemon Company and shit.
That's
the one that makes them.
Have their five or so they've done.
That's the one that they keep doing because it makes really good money for them. I know Traeg was really into it. From my understanding, it's a game that is pretty decently playable, even if you don't want to put a lot of money into it, which is probably why it did so well. But obviously, there's always going to be whales.
Yeah. So they had Mario Kart, and according to this IGN article, Mario Kart Tour and Animal Crossing are in second place, joint second place. They earned $282 million total. And then Dragalia Lost is fourth. I didn't realize they did that at $168 million.
They shut it down too. That's over now.
It's gone.
Yeah, they're going to shut it down.
And then Super Mario Run. Remember that was one. That was their first one after the weird. Remember the weird Miitomo. What the fuck was it called?
Miitomo.
Whatever was it?
Miitomo was one of them.
That was the first.
No, that was the 3DS one.
What was the experimental one where you was a social?
They're basically this.
One you ask people if they like bread.
Yeah,
that one. That was like their experiment to see, can we do mobile games, basically.
Right.
Then they come out with Super Mario Run, which I liked.
I thought it was great.
But that was $10 buy it up front. They didn't realize at the time Nintendo that that's not what you do with these games.
Yeah, you monetize the shit out of them.
But I liked it, and I thought it was worth $10, and I completed it 100%.
Great game. I love that sort of.
But that made only $87 million, despite having half of overall downloads on their apps. That show you how bad it was that no one actually bought it. They downloaded it, they played the demo, whatever missions, stages, and they didn't buy it. And Dr. Mario World did the worst at 14 million.
Yeah, they shut that down last year.
I didn't realize they shut it down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they shut it down. I'm pretty sure we talked about it.
So that was only existence for like a couple of years? A few years?
I think 2 years.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't think that was terrible. I just didn't get into it. I was just like, oh, it's, you know, it's fine. Yeah, but
I played through most of the story mode.
They really shut that down?
And played a couple online games. Online was fun. Yeah, they shut it down.
Wow.
Like I said, I thought we mentioned that in an intro.
No, I don't remember that. That's like...
Well...
Okay. It ended on November 1st. It was out for only two years?
Yeah.
Not even 2.5 years. July 2019 to November 2001. Okay. The point is that this is done gangbusters. This is their app game. That's done gangbusters.
Sure.
Well, Nintendo figured it out, and it went from saying, we'll never do app games, to we're going to do an app game and not realize what the market is, to they sort of like figured out
this gotcha RPG, and that's what everyone apparently wants.
Everyone wants stuff at ultimatenintendo.com, though. They want all the enamel pins. They want the RBI baseball stickers.
Holy golly, they love everything.
They love the Ultimate Nintendo guidebooks.
Holy golly.
They love all of it. They're going to love me. This weekend in Greenville, South Carolina, at the Southeast Game Exchange, July 9th and 10th. Why are you giving that look?
Don't love them too much.
They're going to love me in South Carolina. I've never been in South Carolina before. Flair country. Flair used to always say Greenville. And
Greenville,
he was always on his list when he was on WCW. We're Greenville. You know, he did part of his tour, NWA tour in the 80s. You ever see Ric Flair's a schedule that someone like posted at one time, how nuts his schedule was, like in the early 80s.
No,
it was insane.
Like, I bet.
And that was alongside, you know, drinking every night and railing every woman he get his hands on. It was like insane. He was doing like six shows a week and traveling, sometimes more. It was nuts. So anyway, I'll be at the Southeast Game Exchange. Come out and see me. I'll have stuff going on there, and I'll be on Twitch Wednesday. twitch.tv/contracode. Ian will not be there. Mm-mm. But you should. It's a fun time. People like it. Ian enjoys it the once every 8 months when he's there.
Yeah.
You see that EA tweet about single player games?
Oh, Jesus. EA is fucking dumb. They're always getting themselves into fucking hot ass water. Hot ass water.
Hot dog water.
That's hot warm water. Dog water. So where the fuck did it go? Come on now.
The tweet? The tweet's right there in the article.
Oh, okay.
EA tweeted on June 30th, they're at 10, but they only like playing single-player games.
And,
they got ratioed to the ends of the earth.
Yep. It is crazy, because a lot of developers chimed in on it about how, you know, they were working on a single-player game and lost their job, how some of their most successful games have been single-player games, like the Dragon Age series. Mass Effect was also a single-player game.
Trilogy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A trilogy. They published Anthem and then killed Anthem because that online game didn't fucking work out.
Oh, the robot weird thing one? Yeah. 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 The top reply was our pal Matt McMuscles using an EA Madden image clown post. That's a meme where it's literally...
Actually, I think that's from NFL Blitz.
Oh, it's from Blitz?
I think that's from Blitz.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. That makes it less artistic, less poetic. But that was a top 11,000 replies.
Dead Space. Dead Space, which was one of their most popular games.
But they're still doing single player games. That's
well, yeah, they're also still doing single player
games.
That's
what makes it weirder.
Which makes it odd, and it makes it seem like they're shitting on their teams that are hard at work or making single player games
and shitting on their legacy.
Yes.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's fucking done. Dumb.
The last Star Wars game was single player. Where you're the redheaded Jedi.
Yeah,
we don't know the names of these things anymore.
No,
but that's single player. That had a story mode. Like, so what are you doing? What's going on, EA?
Star Wars Redhead Revolution.
Redheaded Revolution? What the hell? EA game Star Wars
Jedi Fallen Order.
Was that? No, it wasn't that, was it? Yes, it was.
Okay, then we did it.
Yes, it was. It's only name. $20.
I like Redhead Revolution.
It was a third person action adventure from Respawn Entertainment. That came out like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But even like the Squadrons game has single player on it that came out.
So what
are you doing? So obviously people took offense to this because of the reasons we said, plus of EA obviously buying out studios that were known for single player
and shutting them down.
And I know this isn't like a hire, but EA tweeting this out. They hire social media like folks that are clever to do this stuff, like the people that run the Wendy's account and other things. Shout out to the Steakums account because that's funny and it's philosophical, and that's probably just someone that works there. You know,
no, they've done a whole background on him. I can't remember what else
they're not from Steakums.
He's not. It's an actual Steakums account, but he was hired out.
Oh, I thought that was like, does Steakums know about some of those tweets?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They do? Okay, that's their philosophy. The point is that if this is on your social media, this is the stance of your company. This is PR. So obviously there was fierce backlash, and then they backtracked, a couple days ago or yesterday? They backtracked and said something. It was fucking lame as hell.
Yeah, they said, where was it? L accepted or something like that.
Roast well deserved. We'll take this L because playing single player games actually makes them an 11. That's not what you insinuated from your post.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And why would EA, of course, want to focus on multiplayer games, Ian? Why would they want to do that?
Because of all their fucking microtransactions.
Thank you. That's where they make their bones. All their fucking FIFA card packs and NBA shit. And things like that, that's where they make their money.
Yep.
It's like dev time versus profit. If you're looking at the scale, it's least amount of dev time per dollar on all that shit, on those car packs and everything. They realize that. They're not stupid. They're going to make that bank. We'll never forget the... Do I have to move on, Captain Intro? We'll never forget the...
You got another minute.
The Need for Speed... mobile game.
Oh God, where they charged you for gas
from several years back. That's in the Hall of Fame.
That was one of our like first conversations about microtransactions.
It's like 2013 God, or 14.
We were fresh faced.
We were young and plucky. Pat had no gray hairs yet.
I might have. I started getting my grays early.
Did you?
Yep.
I don't remember that. That's when you saw your Prince Valiant look. Clean cut.
Yeah, maybe
short hair. I don't remember that. So anyway. I just think it's funny. Speaking of gamers, toxic fans are called out here recently in the industry due to a couple of things that happened. The Monkey Island creator, Ron, is it Gilbert or Gilbert? Gilbert. I like Gilbert. It sounds fancier. He's basically saying there's been no updates to Return to Monkey Island. Because people are being assholes about the game and the art direction.
Basically, the art direction. They're like expecting pixel art or whatever. This art is extremely stylized and honestly looks a lot like the old art that was used for some of. Basically, it's in line. The characters look like the characters.
You're the Monkey Island expert, so you can talk about it more than me.
So, I mean, there's not a whole lot to say other than, I mean, I think the games were great, and I, you know, this is a different look for the series, but Ron Gilbert's in charge. There's no reason to assume that this is going to be a bad game. It's just a bunch of fucking assholes who think they can control a developer and bully a developer into making the game they want as opposed to the game that he wants to make.
I'm just sort of shocked because I didn't expect a franchise like this to have, I'm being naive, Pat, to have this level of toxicity towards it, being that this goes back to the old, you know, adventure games on the PC.
Well, I am kind of surprised by that, too. I honestly figured the adventure game community would be
older and more mature.
Older and more mature, exactly.
Are we going to have people fucking going after, you know, old Sierra folks, you know, if this happens? Are people going to be going after the next King's Quest game goes out? They're going to go after, you know, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So,
And then it also happened to, like, one, I think the producer, going back to Monkey Island real quick, Ron Gilbert shut down the comments on his blog and says he's just not going to fucking talk about the game anymore. And good for him.
People know about it, people that
put
like
your mental health first.
Yeah, some of the comments here are just, Waited 30 years for this. Just when I wanted to say, whatever you do, don't make it a leftist, multi-culti, gender BS. I saw this ill graphic style. This can't be saved anymore. We'll definitely not buy it. Yeah. When you get, and also comments like that, it's like, okay, you don't know these people are actually fans of this, or they're just using this to pump themselves up, or just, it's just mob mentality.
I think
Let's
that's
just,
a lot of yeah. It's a way for someone to go and say something mean.
Sure.
You know, about something that they maybe never had any, you know, plans on playing. And also it's a lot of people being like, oh, don't inject politics or, you know, satire or anything in this. When
what?
These things have always been that way. I mean, these games always make little knocks and stuff like that. It's sure. like people who watch Star Trek and be like, well, Star Trek's woke now. No, you're just a fucking moron. Star Trek's always been, you know,
yes.
this way. The fact that these people grow up and don't...
They see different things based yes. upon their worldview than what even the creators intended.
Correct.
Which is, they're like reinterpreting things. Yeah, the Star Trek thing was insane when you saw that. Star Trek's always been,
every time
Star Trek's always Star Trek. Been super progressive.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, always. Like, always. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
So this also happened with the producer for God of War, said that there was no real news and asked everyone to remain patient while waiting for more news on the game. And it's a bummer because this game's taking a little while to come out, you know, right. a little bit longer to come out than people wanted, but they're not giving in to, like, crunch. And stuff which, yeah, like that, which
just
is
wait
great.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit longer. I think this is going to go to show, like, there's going to be, I think, diminishing returns. These companies are looking at this and be like, well, what's the point of releasing this information? Like, what is really the point?
There is no point anymore.
When it's ready, we'll come out with the trailer for it and people will get interested in it. What's the point of having all this information up front? Again, it goes back to the Fire Pro thesis. Once it's done or close to it, we'll tell you about it and it's coming out. Nintendo has now done this. You know, great after the Metroid Prime fiasco. Well, that game, who the hell knows when that's going to come out? Or it's been 5 years since they announced it. Or 6 years, whatever it's been originally. Like, there's no advantage to letting people know about this stuff from a financial standpoint or even for mental health until it's ready.
So a development director for EA named Alex Mann made a tweet tweeting Dominic Armato, who is working on the new Monkey Island game with Ron Gilbert. And Alex Mann says, when folks continue to wonder or ask why some game studios don't communicate or speak about games ahead of release anymore, or why they don't engage with communities, this is 100% why. It's not worth the personal toll and cost to mental health to continue to try. It drives me nuts how so many of these people think that they are owed this. And they will scream and screech at the top of their fucking lungs.
Yeah.
And it's...
And unfortunately, they think they can make a difference. I saw some people talking about the backlash to the Sonic movie and how that helped get it done. There is a negative part of that because now people probably do think, hey, if I yell loud enough, they can make changes to the shit I don't like.
Sure.
And it's so rare. That was such a rare exception where that happened with that Sonic movie.
And I think it's
very rare.
I think the reason it happened is because I'm going to guess a lot of the people on the art team for that movie were like, looked to the higher ups and were like, we fucking told you.
Yes.
This is different
yes.
because these are people making the game they want to make.
Correct.
With Sonic the movie, the artists probably hated what they were being told to do too. So they used it as an opportunity to be like,
yes.
trust us.
Yeah. They probably, Wink, had the model ready to go originally what it should have been. And we want to do this.
Look at what we can do.
Yes. And they said, no, we want it to look like a human teeth thing. The point is that it's the same mentality. Rightly or wrongly, it's the same mentality.
Yes,
say, well,
sure.
I'm going to scream and yell and I'm going to get what I want. And like I said, it almost never, ever happens when it comes to this stuff.
Oh, Jesus. Woman, Estelle Tigani. Pro tip, sending me dick pics asking for the God of War Ragnarok release date will not, in fact, get me to reveal the release date. So, fucking disgusting.
Oh, boy. Humanity's amazing. It's amazing. Was that in the Eurogamer article?
Yeah, it is. It's further down. You go, and there's some tweets there.
Fantastic. Cyberpunk 2077. One of the probably most infamous cases of a game not ready for release that had tons of game-breaking bugs. And at the time, we asked, why was this released? How could this have been released at the time? Besides, yes, they wanted out, and you had, you know, the CD Projekt Rex shareholders and stuff. But it sounds like there was actually like a substantial reason on the QA side about what was happening. And this is from For the Win. It's a USA Today article. I did not know there was an imprint called For the Win on USA Today. Cyberpunk 2077 bugs reportedly caused by deception of the QA team. So basically what it sounds like is that they hired this QA team who promised we're going to have the best working on this. And we have the best QA people working on this. And it sounds like they shortchanged CD Projekt Red and they just got a bunch of juniors on. Didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Yeah.
And then
the team was made up of junior staff with less than 6 months of quality assurance experience.
So instead of then like trying to break the game and finding stuff, they were just handing over laundry lists of minor bugs instead. Probably doing the opposite of what QA probably is. You try to break the game first and then worry about the little shit.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you break the game, that's bad.
Right.
And it's a broken game. And it's still incredible, though, that there wouldn't be checks and balances to this along the way. Like
there was a quota of bugs they had to report each day, and they don't know whether or not that was internal or imposed by CD Projekt. Changes things a little bit. If it was imposed by CD Projekt, well, you get what you ask for, unfortunately.
Sure.
If it was internally demanded, then that's just a bad fucking... I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for disaster either way, but where's the blame lie?
But I'd be shocked, though, just from a project management standpoint, that, yeah, if I hire an external team to do this... This is still my game. I have to have someone running that team.
Right. You can't have it be
you can't have it be totally, okay, here comes the list.
Here's the report from, yeah.
No. You have to have someone that's like double checking this or even being like, hey, like, because the programmers are running through the game as well. And they have probably some people be like, okay, are they catching this stuff? Like we're catching this stuff. The QA team should be catching this stuff. There should be like some sort of like, you know, trust but verify system in this that sounds like, was just, oh, we'll just give it to them. We're not going to worry about it all. That's insane for a game this big. I can't picture that this happening. Like, I just can't. You would expect there to be game-breaking bugs. I would expect there to be on a game this large.
Sure.
You would think. And it just sounds like it didn't happen. It says, the programming QA team is being inundated by minor bug fixes. Yeah, it's great to find minor bugs, but you can always fix those down the line, like as the game's even live. Like, that's not as big as a deal. Yeah,
find the stuff where, like, what you need to find is the stuff where, like, the dude's riding on the motorcycle and then T-poses and his pants disappear. Like, that's what you need to
But they still released the game. They could have probably said, all right, we need 6 months. We'll just hold it back.
And let's see, what is Cyberpunk doing right now? So Cyberpunk 2077 right now on Steam is surprisingly not on sale during the...
I thought it was.
Is. It's 50% off.
Okay, so it's like 30 bucks?
It's 30 bucks.
Okay.
And has mostly positive reviews now, so maybe they've gotten that figured out. But with every little bit that comes out about the development of this game, it just sounds like...
Remember, it's only been out for like a year and like 9 months.
Yeah, sounds like a shit show.
So anyway, so at least that answers our questions why we were like scratching our heads, like, how could this happen? This is like, gives a hint to how it can happen.
Yeah.
You want to talk about this Samsung thing real quick?
Sure. So Samsung is releasing putting out a TV that is going to have Stadia, Xbox Game Pass apps, and GeForce Now streaming apps. It says Amazon Luna is coming soon. So I don't love streaming games, but for a lot of people, it's probably good enough to fuck around. You know, Xbox Game Pass has streaming options. People still play PS3 games through streaming on PlayStation Plus or PS Now, whatever it's now called. It's like a different tier of PlayStation Plus. And Stadia is somehow still kicking along. Point being, streaming is good enough for some people, and we're finally getting TVs that are putting these apps on there. We're still not at the point where I think gaming is going to go console-less, but these are the first little baby steps to seeing gaming becoming something else.
Yeah, like I would be more apt to get Microsoft Game Pass if I was like, okay, I'll fire it up on my TV. I don't need a console. I don't even need the Series S anymore. let's just see what it looks like. And then worst case scenario, I still play it on my computer, but yes, it would be nice to play it on a TV.
Yeah, as long as you've got good internet and the streaming is decent, because it is. Yes. I mean, you're not downloading these games. It's not like there's a hard drive on the TV.
It's just what's your Wi-Fi, or if you're tethered up directly, it'd be great, but almost no one's tethered up directly anymore, because people's houses usually aren't set up like that. But, you know, if you want to run a 50-foot line, I could run a 50-foot line on my TV if I have to. It's interesting. I didn't realize how many of these had. I knew about NVIDIA's GeForce. I knew about Stadia. I never heard of Utomic before. I never heard of that.
Neither have I.
Utomic?
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
And then the Amazon Luna one that we hear about coming. It's just everyone's getting in on the action. It's the streaming app wars of 2022.
There's also pass-through controller inputs, which is interesting.
That's cool.
You can use a single controller instead of having to pair multiple ones. And HDMI-connected video game consoles will appear in the hub, so you can kind of fire up anything.
Oh, so if you're in the hub and you have the console connected.
Connected, you could still use your TV remote, go to the gaming menu, click
you,
that.
You want to change the source and everything?
Right, it'll do all that for you. Okay. So, I mean, it's cute.
All right, Samsung. I got a Samsung TV. I like it. I don't know if Ian likes Samsung.
Oh, I was a diehard Samsung until it came time to get the OLED, and LG have the best OLEDs. So that's when I made the switch. But I was always Samsung ahead of time.
A lot of
before
time,
that.
The sources are the same for the actual screen.
Well, LG makes the OLED screens.
They make their own? Okay.
And then I think Panasonic's OLEDs use LG's OLED screens.
Gotcha.
I don't think, or maybe Sony's use LG's. I don't think there's anyone else right now besides LG manufacturing OLED screens in the capacity that they do.
Okay. Ian with some TV tech news right there.
I got really into looking at my OLED TV. I love it. I think I it would be tough for me to go back because the colors are so nice.
Okay. And then I believe we talked about this EA thing. Why is it down here? Did you talk about it earlier than we were supposed to? Or did I move it?
It was EA, you moved it, but didn't move the one article. It was underneath the...
we're breaking the fourth wall.
The Ultimate Nintendo stuff. Yeah, it's all right. That's fine.
Is that okay with Captain Intro?
Yeah, it's all right.
Atari celebrated 50 years as a brand?
Atawi.
Last week, brand? Because the company changed names from Syzygy, whatever it was.
Yep.
So, this would have been nice for the podcast last week. This is a cool thing. It's the Atari 50th anniversary celebration. This will be a retrospective game compilation, and it's going to be from Digital Eclipse.
I have the utmost faith in this being a especially if you like history, if you like information, and you know that sort of stuff. The Digital Eclipse collections. Like the SNK 40th anniversary, the Street Fighter collection, they go out of their way to make sure that it is packed with information that you would want, art you've never seen before, you know, interviews. So I'm really excited for this for the educational reason or for the educational stuff. But it's 90 games across 6 systems. So this isn't going to be your usual 2600 game dump. With an interface.
Yeah.
They're going to be even putting some Jaguar games on there, which is
that's exciting.
It's very exciting because Jaguar emulation is not great and very few of these games have ever really been revisited except for by the very small hardcore Jaguar fan.
So you have interviews with folks on here. Our pal Harris Scott Warshaw is interviewed, obviously. There's going to be 6 titles inspired by the classics. If you look quickly in the intro, you can see there's going to be an updated version of Yara's Revenge and Combat. So that's at least 2 of them that there's like a new modern version on there. And then there's stories. Like I said, stories and interviews. There's Gary Kitchen and David Crane. There, if you see that, Ian, about 26 seconds in. So this is about, like we talked about last week, how you are the guardian and steward of these IPs and going forward. And this is exactly what you do. We mm-hmm. touch upon, like you do compilations, you do things, but this is how you pay tribute, because this might be the last time we see this.
Yeah,
I mean, this could be it. For 100 years from now, like 50 years from now, you probably won't see this. But this is how you do it. You have all the great games. You have interviews with people. You have memories. and you have some remakes, and you do justice to the history. And yeah,
and this is really cool. So they are doing, I think you mentioned it a little bit, but the six games, they're doing six new games on there that revisit older stuff. So Sword Quest Airworld is finally going to get a release, or they're basically the people at Digital Eclipse made it based on the design, you know, based on design influence.
That's a great
from the original
idea.
Games. It's fucking cool as hell. And then Haunted House is going to get a voxel based sequel called Haunted Houses. Mm-hmm. Then there's apparently going to be a vector like type game that pulls from Asteroids, Tempest, and other vector based classics. A new Breakout, Quadra Tank, and then the Yars Revenge.
So you're going to get, I'm doing the math in my head, 2600, 52 probably, 78, Atari Computer, Lynx, and Jaguar.
That would be my guess, yes.
And I'm guessing some of those Atari games, 80s arcade games we love. I'm guessing. I would hope some of those are there. I hope we would get like Paperboy and Rampart in those.
And I feel like this is something Digital Eclipse would do if possible, especially for the PC version. Allow an option for a trackball in there. Pain in the ass to go and find. No one has them, but that would be a neat thing to find in there.
Or at least the mouse, then, you know.
Well, I'm sure they'll do that, but
at least the mouse.
Give me a trackball.
Look at him. Look into his eyes.
Please. I just want to play Centipede the right way at home.
And hell, while I'm at it, and you got Tempest with a spinner. It's going to be a little. you got the Jaguar. Looks like the Jaguar Tempest. Put the arcade one on as well. That'd be great. Because that's never really been released, has it? I guess some compilations had the arcade Tempest.
I'm pretty sure they do.
Some brought up in the comments as we didn't talk about Star Wars Arcade. Well, there's a rights issue to that. It'd be great to get the Star Wars Arcade game on there. It would.
That was Atari. I always forget that was Atari.
Yeah, that was Atari. But
it's weird because there's a Star Wars Arcade game for the ColecoVision.
Well, yeah, it's the same arcade one. They just ported it over.
Yeah, I mean,
it was on the 2600. It's just rare.
Yeah, I think there's a 5200 version as well.
I think I bought it at Luna Video Games, two locations.
I bought it there one
time. There's an Asteroids. There was Asteroids on. Is this like a Jaguar Asteroids? So we'll see what the list is. I would love to know two things: price and the games. I want to see a list of games.
I'm gonna guess it'll be a $59.99 sort of average release, but maybe not.
I'm not a 40, they'll go up to 60.
I think so. I think all their other games were 60, and I mean, it well worth it.
I want the 80s. This is a day one buy if I get all those 80s arcade games. I always talk about the great mid 80s run, 720, all those. It's a day, I mean, day one. I'm more excited about this than the other compilations we've seen because of that. Plus all the interviews and stuff.
Well, and the thing, I love these compilations, especially for systems that I like Atari stuff, but I like playing it en masse. Like, I like being able to flip around between games, and I don't focus on one at any given time. And this, you know, this is a system that maybe I don't know everything about, and I can just buy this one collection and have a real good time with it.
So we don't have a release date yet on this?
No, I think it was just announced. We don't have a release date or games
price
list.
Or games, yeah. Obviously, we'll get the game list. A lot of it's going to be the ones we've seen before on these compilations, but there's going to be, or whatever you can get on the Atari VCS, but there'll be some probably hopefully ones besides the Jaguar. I want to see Jaguar. I want to see Lynx.
Just like the SNK collection, they did focused on a lot of stuff that we maybe never got to play from SNK. I have a feeling they will do a good job making the game list very interesting.
It looks like there's some obviously third parties on here. I saw Minor 2049 around here. I wonder if they want to throw in. Yeah, you kind of muddy it with some of the Activision Atari 2600 games, but it'd be nice since they're kind of synonymous with the console.
But I mean, it's Atari games.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see the Activision ones.
No, I get it. I'm looking at there's the quick list here. They show them. You get Scrapyard Dogs in the 7800. You get that classic on there. So looking at some of these here, some of these third party. I'm trying to see which ones are third party real quick. I actually never played 7800 Asteroids. Never played that.
I played it on the Evercade. I mean, it's whatever. It's fine.
It's just a graphical update.
Yeah, it's not vector. It's just like a more of a full color sort of thing.
Gotcha. Okay. And meanwhile, other pal Leonard Herman, one of the OG video game historians.
We love Leonard.
Author of Phoenix: Rise of Video Games. I think is there a fifth version coming out?
Jesus.
I think there's a fifth.
I have fourth.
Yeah, he gave us the fourth. He was very nice. He published for the 50th anniversary. The final correspondence is between Nolan Bushnell of Atari and Ralph Baer, who created the Brown Box, which became the Mana Box Odyssey, the first home video game console. And talks about the rivalry. This is on his website, thegamescholar.com. I'll link it on the YouTube below. They were professional rivals, it looks like, up to the very end.
Yep.
It's an interesting read. The big takeaways is that they obviously, their rivalry centers on the fact that, you know, like Ralph thinks that, Nolan Bushnell went to the event where they saw the Odyssey or the Brown Box at the time being demoed, and then Nolan then came up with Pong after that. He took the idea and made it, you know, he perfected it. And, you know, so obviously there's some ill will towards that. They settled that stuff in court. Some of that was settled.
They talk about that in the letter.
But then Atari had the Touch Me little handheld little game, which was a repeat pattern game. And then
and that became Simon.
Ralph Baer was like, you know what? I can do this better and add sound to it. And Simon was a cultural phenomenon, while Touch Me is like a footnote that no one talks about.
Is funny because my grandfather loved it. Had a little Atari Touch Me, mm-hmm. like the little portable one. And it made sound. I don't know if the original version did. But it wasn't like the big light up buttons or anything. Like,
could it have the same tones? I think it's different.
I think it might be different.
So anyway, so it's interesting because they had rivalries. So a lot of this letter is them sniping at each other. But the big thing that Ralph wanted, you know, Ralph basically wanted receipts, because there was an insinuation, you can read it, that Nolan Bushnell was like, hey, Ralph, you looked at my notebook with my ideas and stuff. And Ralph's like, oh, that's interesting. Where is this notebook?
Well, and what I love is how he's like, that sounds really cool. That should definitely be preserved, but I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
In the nicest way possible. Ralph's like, hey, that'd be great for preservation. Ralph's like, all my stuff's preserved in the Smithsonian. They have copies of all my notes and all the stuff I came up with. Right. They have my original brown boxes. Where's this magical notebook?
Just unloads on him. And like, it really is like, it's nice.
It's a nice.
Yeah.
Ralph's a guy you want to share a sandwich with there. And then Nolan never responded, because I think he realized they don't like each other professionally, going back to the 70s.
Yeah, and they talked a little bit about, and I feel like that's kind of lame, about how they, like, 99-2000 CGE, they were supposed to, like, meet up and play a game of Pong and see who the winner was.
In all goodwill,
And Nolan said he was going to be there, and Baer showed up, and Nolan never showed up. So it seems like Baer was probably a bit more
magnanimous at the end?
Into the idea of, you know,
let bygones be bygones.
Burying the hatchet.
Yeah.
But it seemed like Bushnell, on the other hand, was harboring some very long-time grudges.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know Nolan. He's still around. Never met him. But Nolan, if you look at, like, historically and monetarily, came out much the winner, if there was a war at all.
Right.
Due to obviously Pong and Atari, and then selling to Warner Communications. And he had Funtime Pizza, whatever, Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
Became Chuck E. Cheese. So he had all this stuff going on. And Ralph was just, you know, led a, you know, more quiet life, and was mostly forgotten about for most of, you know, video game history.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know why, from my perspective, why no one would still, you know, hold these grudges.
Right. You came out on top, man. Like,
yeah. Both can share credit if you want to share credit.
30 years ago.
You can both share credit. So, you know, there you have it. It's interesting to check out. So the combination of that happening and this, so I'm actually kind of excited for the Celebration Collection, especially since, if this is a leap forward, I think I saw murmurings of, you know, a new Jaguar emulator or advances in order to do this. That's significant.
Sure.
For the whole the scene, if that emulator can be used or sourced in the future to, like, you know, that's significant.
Right.
Because I've not heard of a Jaguar games like this being, you know, re-released like this.
No, so neither have I.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ian.
Yes, Patrick.
It seems like if there's a theme to the almost 10 years we've been doing this podcast, it's over 9 years at this point. It's one bad console idea that turns into a scam ending and another one beginning. There's been about three or four that has happened throughout the podcast of one scale or another, maybe five, if I really think about it. Now we have almost the culmination of what could be potentially a new scam console.
So, yeah, we went from VGS, Retro VGS, to Chameleon. Both basically the same thing, but if you look at the nitty-gritty, there's some delineations, sure. Marks between them. And then right as that ended, we got into the Amico. And
There's even little ones in between, the Retro Engine Sigma.
Yeah.
Dreamcade was problematic. You had these other ones.
Then you jumped into, you know, Amico, which needs no introduction, does not need to be talked about in any depth here. And that's kind of winding down. I don't know that we're ever going to see a true end to it. But that's winding down. And here we have Pulium. Which sounds like fucking polonium, which is, yes, an element, but also what...
A radioactive one.
Yeah, you know, the whole polonium tea, you know, to...
That the Russians used
to... give you, you know, radioactive poison.
Or polio. It also sounds like polio.
Sounds like polio.
A horrific disease.
The Pulium system, the first thing I want to point out is that they simply took the GameCube logo and rotated it into a P shape. Pulium has come out and said that they did not copy it. They said the difference is theirs is a P and represents blockchain, and Nintendo's is a G and represents GameCube, which is their system.
I think that's the same argument that Vanilla Ice used when they sampled Under Pressure from Queen.
Yes. dun, dun, dun. It's the tings.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. What was that called on VH1? Vanilla Ice sings the dings was what I think.
There it is.
So, Pulium is going to be a next-gen multi-chain console that plays games that are built on Immutable X, Ethereum, Solana, Polygon, Wax, some other bullshit, and it's going to bring multi-chain. It's going to give you a multi-chain wallet for trading, swapping, and bridging. You're going to be able to download games in metaverses. Buy and trade NFTs.
There it is. Ding, there it is. There's a. Yes. Well, it's an NFT.
Well, game. That's what I said. It's all the blockchain games.
NFT gaming console.
You can check leaderboards, transactions, and game activity, and stay connected with your friends. Okay. They also wanted to, promote their clean dashboard for playing games quickly, which literally just looks like a stock Android box screen.
Yeah. Let's talk about that real quick. I think it's funny where they. They have to, in this day and age, the Amico couldn't do a clean interface. We saw how awful that was. A clean interface, yes, Ian, is literally, let's make it look like every other interface that exists. Let's have rows, maybe columns, maybe you can sort, click a button, do by alphabetical or like your bookmark games. Like, that's all you need for an interface. Like, it should be more difficult in 2022 to do a complicated interface, to do a non-clean interface should be harder than doing a clean, easy-to-use interface. Because we know what we like, and it's just things laid out easily. You can scroll, maybe, and have rows. Like, that's what you need for an interface.
So, the controller is going to have a thumbprint scanner to keep your console secure. And it will have a button that will bring up your wallet. So you can, because that's what you need on a video game console is a button that quickly brings up your wallet. I mean, so clearly this is bullshit from the start. It's just a money making scheme.
So they're already basically capitalizing the fact that, these NFTs are worth money in all these games. So you want to quickly be able to, trade them and buy and sell, sell them, buy them at the push of at least a thumbprint to bring it up.
So.
By the way, the controller looks like, you said, like it looks like a PS4 controller?
Yes, looks like a PS4 controller.
Just the middle would be probably the thumb part, I'm guessing?
Yeah, maybe.
Instead of the trackpad?
So here's the roadmap they have for this.
Can I really quickly say that it bothers me now more and more, since you pointed out the GameCube thing, that this is not a cube shape?
Yeah.
This console? It looks like an Android box.
Yes.
It's a rectangular, curved edge-looking Android box.
Yep. So here's the I'm not gonna so here's the roadmap. 2022's Pollium Pass and PFP airdrop. The Pollium Pass is the NFT that they're going to sell. They're going to make 10,000 of them, and you have to get one to be a... When you get one, you become a holder, and the first 10,000 units that they're saying are going to be out in 2024 are going to go to those holders.
So get in early. Yes. So you buy the NFT to get the console rights to get it once it's out.
Right, which I'm going to come back to. 2022 is PFP airdrop. I don't really know what that means. Profile picture airdrop. Yes. Staking. 2023, game tag claim. 2023 as well. SDK, that's software development kit, right? So
right, the ones that are coming out
2023. So they're not even going to have the SDK out when they're asking you for the money for the Pollium Pass. Then the Pollium wallet will come up on in 2024, and then the Pollium one will release in 2024. What's going to happen.
Okay,
this is what I think is going to happen.
So Pollium Pass is first,
of course it is,
on the roadmap,
because that's what people buy. So what's going to happen, I see this as a rug pull immediately. They're going to sell 10,000 Pollium passes, and then this is going to go the way of Amico, where nothing ever fucking gets done.
Okay.
They're going to disappear.
Okay. So Pollium Pass gets you the rights for the console, the hardware rights. They'll ship it to you.
In 2024, holders will get their Pollium one, and in 2025, there will be a public release. What games will be available during launch? Here's where some of these things... There's some similarities between this and stuff we've talked about in the past. We are currently in talks with multiple game developers.
This sounds familiar.
This sounds real familiar.
We're in talks.
We will list the games on Discord in the launch library channel. There's some countries that'll be unavailable in. Will the console have a warranty? Yeah, we'll talk about that in 2023 is basically their response.
Mm-hmm.
Will the console be safe to use? Yes, they will be required to use Touch ID. When you first set up your console, the software will perform safety checks to make sure the console is genuine and safe to use. Sure it will. What will be the specs? Again, we aim to build a high-performance console. The specs you see on the site are not confirmed until we have a functional prototype. But here's the crazy thing.
Okay.
They are promising a functional prototype in a few months.
Even though they can't release specs right now?
They can't release specs right now. They don't know what it's going to be. There's no SDK for it until 2023. But they're going to have a functional prototype in 3 months.
It's almost like I almost applaud them, because they probably see how crazy people are about game consoles. They probably see people like, people love video games. People love NFTs. Let's combine these two. And we can come out with the hardware that, let's just say this is a real product, it'll come out. Okay.
I know.
Benefit of the doubt.
I know.
We gave Amico the benefit of the doubt.
I know.
You gave a 50-50 chance it was going to come out.
And that was early on.
Either way, you gave the benefit of the doubt. Let's say this comes out. What are the odds that this will be...
Nightmare?
Well... What are the odds that this will be like worth anywhere in the stratosphere of what you pay for? Like, let's just say the NFT I can picture being worth like $500-$600, and the console be $180, like in terms of parts.
Sure.
Like they're claiming 8K gaming, like 120 frames per second, 8K?
8K for Axie Infinity?
That
looks like it's literally like just blobs.
And that's the most famous, successful,
that's the most popular one,
most successful NFT game, and that's falling apart.
And it's currently falling apart. Yeah. And that's the other thing. They're talking about this coming out in 2024. That's being real bullish on NFTs.
It's also being bullish on game dev. Again, when Tommy announced the Amico, we're going to come out in 2 years with this.
Yeah,
I don't think that ever happened. I go back to the calendar and see if it came out October 10, 2020. It gets better. It gets better. The total supply will be the 10,000 passes for the consoles, which, by the way, when you buy your Pollium Pass, it's like buying the physical product. You're not guaranteed a console.
Well, no.
The console is a free perk of getting the
That's how all of these NFT things have worked. They release an NFT, tell you all the things you're going to be able to do with that NFT, go quiet, and then rug pull.
Because then they can't be as hard to accuse you of being fraud when they can say, we didn't promise you you weren't buying the console. You're buying a blockchain place,
yes,
which is NFT. We didn't promise you The Evel Knievel game, you bought literally what's in my hand. You didn't buy a game license.
Right.
If we never came out with a game license, you're fucked. Guess what? Pat's fucked. But I got this box.
I can't believe like we were so deep into the Amico stuff that like it was ridiculous, but like it
this is an NFT. This is like literally like in terms of it, like this is a promise of something that'll never come out.
I just can't believe how insane this move was.
Yeah, but this is an NFT
essentially.
We have a roadmap to a console.
Yes,
we want your money, and it'll never come out potentially. This is exactly what this is.
Well, that's what they're doing. Yeah, that's what they're doing with NFTs.
Yes.
So it's the other thing is they're doing some Amico level gymnastics in terms of talking about who this is for. I can't find it right now. It might have been in the white paper. But they talk about how there's all these people who play games on consoles. All of these NFT games are on PCs. We're going to make a console for people to play NFT games on a console.
Well, you can play them on a PC.
Why buy this? Yeah. But all of this is standing on a foundation of people assuming that NFTs are still going to be around in 2 years.
Well, there's a couple of things. There's an article on Video Games Chronicle that's connected to this. NFT sales plunged to a 12-month low in June. Monthly sales total just over $1 billion, still insane, down from $12.6 billion in January. Pat math, that's down about 94%, something like that, 93% in 6 months.
Haven't had a good dose of Pat math in a while.
I think it's about right.
I think you're probably right. Yeah.
One divided by 12.
You're not super wrong.
So anyway, so that's pretty bad. I don't think it's going to bounce back, especially if we're heading for a recession, especially since crypto has crashed tremendously and it's connected to that. It's bad. This is we talk about the logo. We did not copy Nintendo GameCube logo, but we are listening to the community and we will hire a new illustrator to design a more original logo for us. It concludes, some of you are not passionate about Web3 and are only here for entertainment and FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Yeah, they also claim that there was a bot attack on their announcement tweet it was really because it was negative reception. They claimed it was a bot attack, yet they bought bots to leave.
To pump up.
To
say, this is a great idea.
Great idea.
This is awesome.
Awesome. Look forward to this. Yeah, like generic positive comments.
Anything is possible when you are passionate about a problem. We will deliver. Stay tuned. And they released a white paper, which is what, you know, these new blockchain techs and crypto, they do you want to call it like it's like a more like scientific like paper about what we're doing, where we're going. It's like structured,
right,
to make it seem like it's more important.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's all it is. And it's on their website.
It's just fluffing shit up with a white dress shirt.
Exactly. It's like, oh, this is prim and proper. It's like doing a college essay. And a lot of it, disclaimer, this white paper is intended for a reader with a non-technical background. We are currently creating a white paper with more technical details, which we publish to our website shortly. What is Polium? Polium is a Web3 gaming company that is building the world's first multi-chain gaming console and the infrastructure for Web3. The problem is because of different blockchains, which makes them difficult to find. Even though, like I said, if you have a PC, you can just go back and forth.
Right. There's no reason for this.
I don't understand it.
Even in the world of NFTs, which makes it ridiculous to begin with, we still end up looking at this like we do any other console and go, what's the market?
What will happen if the problem is not solved? Without a sufficient solution, Web3 space will not grow. We need mass adoption, and to achieve that, we need to expand to the traditional gaming market by building on a product that is affordable to buy and easy to play. I wonder what their definition of affordable is. If they're saying this is going to be 8K, 120 frames per second, Okay.
Sure.
There's a lot more in this white paper. Touch ID, which is okay, I guess, to make sure if you're connected to basically your wallet, that actually makes sense.
Yes.
That's the one thing that kind of makes sense, so you can't get hacked at home. The SDK, the Polium Pass, you get your PFP airdrop, you get your console, you get staking rewards, whatever the hell those are going to be, and launch events in Japan, US, and UK. The fact that they put it in UK makes me wonder if they're from the UK doing this, but I don't know. We don't know. Here you go. The gaming market size. This sounds familiar. What's your definition of the market?
I think this is where they get into, well, lots of people play on console over PC, so that means we would have more of a market on console when NFT seems like a very PC-centric thing.
The metaverse market will be worth $1 trillion or more by 2030, according to them. And so they're counting on, well, that's going to be big, so we'll be the console to tap into that.
People just say things.
They just say things, exactly. People on Twitter ask the right questions. What games are on this? I mean, there was a thread. What games are on this?
Yeah.
And like, well, we're talking to people. What can I play on this? What? They try to teach them that the reason a console exists is for the games.
Yeah, the response to this online was, you know, except for the bots, like, all negative. No one's buying this bullshit anymore.
Will the console run browser-based games? Very specific, they put that in. Yes, the console will be able to run games that are built using JavaScript, Java, Python, C, C++.
My guess is that a lot of these games are web-based.
Yeah, HTML5 and Lua. Will there be exclusive games for the console? Exclusive. We love talking about exclusive games for consoles that don't come out.
Oh, we should do, man. I love exclusives.
We most certainly know that having exclusive games on a gaming console is a key factor for console success. When competing with big brands, it is important to have exclusive titles to even compete. However, Polium is not competing with major brands. We've heard that before. Our console is not competing with Nintendo Switch. We are an entire new sector for Web3 gaming, and we'll have a first mover advantage. We are currently in conversations with gaming studios and will be forming partnerships. We will make some announcements soon. Jesus. What are the odds that this they actually get like a real partner? Like, I mean, like a grade A partner. Like EA says, we're coming on board for this.
Zero.
Activision says, we're coming on board. Like seriously.
I think it's zero.
Once we have exclusive games, the games will be only available to play on the console, not on PC or other consoles. Okay. So this is going to be, you know, basically a computer in some form or an Android box. You're saying that there won't be a way to figure this out. You're going to say that it's going to be locked down. You won't be able to play this on a PC somehow. Like, you're going to put that much proprietary into this that you won't be able to access it. You won't be able to have an emulator for this. This is bold shit, Ian. This is bold shit.
Oh, it sure is, man.
What will be the roadmap? What will the roadmap be after the console is launched? We will have some exciting innovations that we have not announced yet in the roadmap. Our belief is that our long-term vision will change the entire Web3 ecosystem.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Like the Polium VR headset. That's literally on here. You can't make it up. This is almost like the natural progression of where we've gotten with this, where let's take the cutting-edge tech that we can scam marks for and combine it with a new game console. I would never have dreamed this happening before, Ian, 5-6 years ago. Because you've already proven that you can scam people. People are losing collectively millions of dollars a day with rug pulls and scams with Web 3.0, with these games getting hacked, with rug pulls on NFTs, with crypto being rug pulls or just losing money, with now the crypto marketplaces themselves locking up your fucking money. You can't cash out. They're afraid of people making run on their banks because they don't have the money. They're not liquid enough to give out the funds.
Yeah.
So their money's lost.
All the money they've taken in is not there.
So their money's being held while the cryptos crash. I mean, you can't make it up. This is better than banks. This is decentralized. This is better.
No.
And now we have the gaming console equivalent, Ian. It's almost perfect. It's almost perfect.
It is.
We can follow this along on Web3 is going great, and we can see how much it's going to cost. Like you said, the fact that you're going to put up your money for this console, the promise
a
of the
year
console,
before there's an SDK.
And then 2 years before it's released.
I in some way, shape, or form wish that this was going to last longer so we could laugh at it for longer, but I am almost certain that it's going to be NFTs are sold, long period of silence, 2 months of silence, maybe not even that, month of silence.
They shut down their Discord, which you can go to the Discord right now. It's very robust. They have an FAQ.
Very robust.
They have the FAQ. They have their media share. They have their memes. They have the community set up. I mean, it's easy to set up this stuff. They have their gallery. They have their they have a scam alert support. Ooh, trying to make it seem like it's legit.
Right.
And then they have in their FAQ.
Report other scams here, not our scam.
I love this little ditty in the, will there be more consoles in the future after the 10,000 original? Yes, in 2025, our goal is to manufacture and sell over 1 million consoles. Why is that always the number? Why is that? That was like the number with the Amico. That's a number that what's his name? Awful video game prognosticator said that there would be a million Amico sold when it came out. Why is this the number for this stuff? I don't understand it. Michael Pachter, he said there'll be a million Amico sold in the first year.
I don't know, because it's the it sounds like success.
It sounds like success, even though you know you're not really basing on reality or market trends or the fact, like you said, by the end of this year, NFTs could be totally wiped out at this rate. They could be.
So. Well, we talked about it last week. It already seemed like Square Enix was starting to lose their confidence in it.
Sure.
Medium term goal.
Medium term. We'll talk about it later in the year. We'll see what's happening. We'll talk about it. So anyway, any other final thoughts? I just think it's funny.
No.
We thought we'd be done with alleged scam consoles, but
I wish.
But here we are. Ian, we have a Patreon.
Yeah, we do. Patreon.com/CU podcast.
Are you upset we have a Patreon?
No. I just you go. You give us some money, which is nice of you.
You asked for it.
And then we do a full video podcast, bonus bits.
The bonus.
Writing by me most weeks. And then
monthly Google Hangout.
We had Hangouts. Hangouts.
We'll do that in a week and a half.
Week and a half, yeah, because we're both out of town this weekend.
And then you vote on these.
You vote on these.
I'm going to pull you through the fucking glass shards to get through it.
Yeah. Some days I get it.
In second place, how is gaming on the New Jersey Boardwalk different in 2022? 29%, almost won last week. But we have a more modern topic, or at least topic that's in the news. Analyzing the all-new Commodore 64X Kickstarter. So this was alerted to us in the past couple of days. And I didn't know this was happening. And before I get into this, and we're going to be probably a little critical of this, this already hit its goals.
Yep.
So they smashed through it. The goal was 30,000, and then they've had 165,000 with 12 days ago. Whatever we say is not going to affect it at all. I know that there's a love for the Commodore. Probably a little bit more in Europe than here, but still here. There's a love for the Commodore. And there's been Commodore Mini has come out the past... was it 3-4 years? The Commodore Mini came out. I saw one for sale at Too Many Games,
right?
With built-in games, and there's been people trying to do these like projects like this, like shells, because people love the original shell. They love the clicky clacky keys, and it's a cute little form factor for a Commodore 64.
Yeah,
it's cute. I this is one of the first computers I used. Our computer lab somehow someone donated all Commodore 64s. In my Catholic school. I don't know why, but we had Commodore, because they were cheaper overall than XTs. That probably was why, partially.
Yes.
But I played Lemonade Game. We learned how to program. We played, we learned how to type. I'm a Commodore 64. So while I didn't grow up with one, I respect the people that did. Great gaming platform. And you know, and all that. So, this has a few different things on this, Ian.
So, yeah, I do want to point out that this was, I just saw this. This originally came out in 2011.
The original concept with a shell.
Yes, and it was running Ubuntu 10.0, so it was running Linux.
Okay.
And now they're bringing it back, they say, back better than ever. So what this is essentially a nice shell, and it does look like a nice shell.
Yeah.
And they've put the money in, they're using Cherry MX switches, it looks like the keys are nice, it's going to be clicky. But it's running what seems to be, you know, basically... netbook specs is how you put it, and I think that's pretty accurate. Maybe it's slightly more powerful.
Well, they claim that this could emulate consoles up to the year 2000.
Okay,
so when you hear that, you're like, that's netbookish.
Sure.
You can probably do N64, but you're gonna feel it. It's gonna be rough. You know?
The price on this is nuts. So just the shell alone, which you can buy and then basically put your own board in.
You can put it. It says it can support Raspberry computer module. You can whatever you can probably fit in, whether a motherboard you can fit in. It comes with a fan as well.
Yeah, $169 USD.
Okay, so you get the shell, you get your keys.
Expensive, but if it's a nice shell, and like I said, you know, when we were talking last night about it, the mechanical keyboards themselves, nice ones, are not super cheap. So, you know, look at the cost in that mechanical keyboard. Not so bad. It's when they start adding the guts to this thing
So that has 110 backers.
Right.
Right now, that has 110. So that's the early bird, by the way. The early bird is 169. And then, like you said, you go up from there. So the early bird Commodore 64X Extreme. This is an entry-level PC in a Commodore 64 style case. You don't need to build a thing. It's all done for you. It can pretty much, this is what it says, it can pretty much run any modern PC application, surf the web, watch 4K films, TV, and even install Windows 11, play retro games, and it's powerful enough to emulate systems up to 2000. Gives you an idea of what this is, what the graphics card capability is, you know, built in into the motherboard, things like that.
Commodore OS Vision will give the user the opportunity to run original Commodore 64 games and applications. So it sounds like it's probably a proprietary emulator.
Passively cooled Intel Celeron J6412. I looked that up, Ian. I talked to you on the phone, breaking the fourth wall. The MSRP on the chip is $54. That's consumer price on there. And then I'm not familiar with what board it has. I couldn't find that. But it also has a 250 gigabyte solid-state hard drive. And I looked that up, and that's about $50.
And then 4 gigabytes of DDR4 RAM, probably not a whole lot.
Expandable to 8 gig. It sounds kind of like the VCS because that was expandable. That was my first thought when I saw this.
Sure.
This is like the VCS. It's
yeah.
Like, it sounds like it's in that realm.
Yep, it does. It's basically a hobbyist computer that you can do, you know, you can stream on, you know, emulate some stuff, get a few games. And I mean, honestly, not more pricey than the Atari VCS. That's kind of crazy.
$569 for the early bird.
Yeah. Here. And it goes up pretty exponentially. Ultimate.
So they have the Extreme, which is, like you said, this is the Atari VCS. You're not going to be running Cyberpunk on this probably, or you know, something like that. But you'll be able to emulate most consoles, and obviously the Commodore 64, you don't need anything. And so this one has, how many backers does this have? That had less backers. That had only 9 on that one, on the Extreme.
So
only 9.
There's only 9 backers on the Extreme. There's 110 backers on the case. And then there's
plus 214, you go to the bare bones, yeah.
And then there's the Ultimate, heavy duty. Okay. So there's the Ultimate, which only has 21 backers, but makes sense because why would you, if you're already going to spend more than you should on something like this, you're going to want the more powerful version.
It's divided up.
You've clearly got money to burn.
There's like 320 for just a case. For Extreme, there's about 80 if you combine both.
Okay.
And then for, let's talk about the Ultimate, which they have 38 plus scrolling up to the early 38 plus 21.
So
they have 60.
The Ultimate will emulate systems up to 2010, it says. It also has a GTX 1650 graphics chip embedded on the motherboard, which means fantastic AAA gaming, 3D rendering, and pretty much any other graphical intense application you can think of. I'm going to doubt that.
The fact that it's not its own graphics card and it's integrated, I know some of the laptops have more powerful ones, but even those...
Oh, my laptop has a GTX 3080. My laptop runs shit at like PS5 levels.
Is it integrated?
No, it's separate. It's separate.
So this is where I kind of scratch my head at this point, because I can picture wanting the case, put in your old Raspberry Pi, you just want to play Commodore stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
I think that's actually pretty cool.
For $170. Okay, I gotcha. The medium size one, if you don't want to... If you're a hobbyist, or if you don't want to put in your own Raspberry Pi or your own little mini Android board or whatever, or a little mini netbook board, I get it. Do it for me, and it's, what is it, $570. Still expensive. It's still probably the price, but you're taking care of the work for me. But now when you get to this level where you're spending $1,425 for, by comparison, something that's going to be a lot less powerful than a rig that would cost that much, that's where I kind of scratch my head about, what is this?
Yeah, man.
What is this at this point? Because you still, it's an Intel Core i5. You get the NVIDIA GTX 1650 graphics. It's built in. It's probably better than, you know, my netbook has. You get still only 4 gigs of RAM, expandable to 64. I'm sorry, you get 8 gigs of DDR. You get a 500 gig Solid state. That's not that much more than the 256 one. That's not going to cost that much more. So this is the one I scratch my head, not just for the cost, but like who actually wants this? Like what's the audience? And obviously there's 80 people that want this, because now you're talking about the form factor of something from the 80s, cute and clicky clacky, but I want to be able to play newer games on here and have this be like, I just don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. It's 8 gig of DDR4 on this.
What I want to point out, you know, while we're talking about this is when I initially saw this, I thought this was going to be more like something that I actually think is really kind of cool. And that's the ZX Spectrum Next.
Okay.
So the Spectrum, you know, was a very popular computer overseas. And what the Spectrum Next is it's actually, they say it's still an 8-bit home computer. That will still run the original software, and you can still use the original hardware on it, which is pretty interesting. I think it's an FPGA console.
For the ZX Spectrum?
Yes. Started life, blah, 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 blah. Next, industrial design. The case is really nice. So, yeah, I can't quite tell here on the Wikipedia page, but I think there's multiple FPGA cores, and I think it's probably running an FPGA core for the Spectrum. And it is it's expensive.
It sold out. Looks like, is that a stop?
It sells out every time they do them because people love them.
But it was less money.
Yeah.
Than the medium size Extreme. It was 300 pounds.
Right. Which is honestly, for what it is, pretty cool. And, you know, the idea behind it was they wanted to, you know, kind of appeal to, it says right here, retro computing enthusiasts and to encourage a new generation of bedroom coders. And that's when I see people like, I think, Dylan Cuthbert from Q Games. And I want to say maybe Mike Mika and a couple other people that I follow online have these. And there is a robust, hobbyist coding scene online.
So this is more in sort of line with the spirit of the time and the coding language and the
it's literally a remake of the original computer with extra bells and whistles.
Sure, and it's $200 less.
Yeah, and this is something that I think is very interesting. If Commodore had gone for that, I was telling you yesterday, if Apple were to release something like this that was an Apple II, I would buy it no matter what.
Well, here's the thing, though. This isn't Commodore. They're trying to get the Commodore license.
Right.
So that's the difference, I think. It's sort of like, well, I was, you know, I'm more of a glorified hobbyist, enthusiast that's into producing these. I can make them, and now I'll go out to the Commodore people and get the rights to it. So it's coming from a different, I think, space because of that.
Oh, sure. I just wish that's what I had seen.
Oh, sure. No, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. Like, I look at this and I'm like, well, what's the difference? You can make this without the Commodore print on it and just put out the case. And the keys.
Right.
That's the way I see it.
Its connection to the original Commodore is tenuous.
It's gone. Yeah. It's just the form factor. Like the VCS.
The Spectrum Next actually did pretty well, too. 3,010 units sold from the first Kickstarter.
3,000?
They sold 3,000. 10 plus units.
Wow.
In the first Kickstarter, 3,010, that number is the cased ones. So they were selling boards initially too.
Gotcha.
And then the second Kickstarter, 5,000 plus on the ZX Spectrum Next. I'm telling you, people love this.
I think
thing.
We missed talking about that at the time. Because we talked
I wish I had known.
We talked about the handheld and how that turned into a disaster.
Yeah, but I think that was different people doing it.
That was 8 years ago.
If I had money to burn, I would buy one of these. I think it's cool. I would never get very far with it, but I would love playing the homebrew projects, and it would be fun to
explore. Load up the emulator or the Dynamo emulator if it has FPGA.
And it would be fun for me to experience a home computer system that I never got to touch.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful, like,
gorgeous.
The colors, the multicolors of the black, it's beautiful.
I do want one.
No, they look great.
It's really
I never.
Cool.
I got the smaller, little Timex Sinclair in my garage at the swap meet. I never saw the big one. Before I saw like the mini one. So it's not to disparage this project too much, but it just shows you like the different spaces there. And the fact that you said they sold like that many, like 8,000.
8,010 without accounting for loose boards, which I don't know if they did that in the second run.
Gotcha. So I think this, like I said, this is interesting, but again, I'm not sure what the audience is because if you want the games, just buy the mini. even though you're not using the keyboard. I do like the idea of the case, like we said, and or the, even the medium one, even though it's probably overpriced. I really wonder how much the licensing costs. How much is the licensing into this freaking $1,400 one? How much is having that Commodore, literally just the logo on there? How much is that accounting for? Because that's all the connection is. I will say I do like the little on the side, you can slide in a little SATA hard drive. Quick and easy.
Yeah, I think the Commodore one has a built-in solid state, and you can add a SATA.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So they all have the built-in. Well, the two do. The medium and the large ones do. The medium, large, the extreme and the ultimate do. But yes, either way, you can click it in probably into the board, and it's like quick and easy. I do like that idea. Do that because obviously, you know, the SATA boards can hold. They're a lot cheaper. The SATA versus the solid state flash drives. They're a lot cheaper. So all right. Well, either way, they made their goal, and best of luck. I almost bought the, like I said, the mini one with the Wiko joystick.
I know people who have it and said it was pretty fun.
It's fine. Just to play the Commodore games. That, you know, I didn't grow up on it. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Monk Pack. Monk Pack offers low sugar, keto friendly bars, which are plant based, gluten free, and non-GMO. They're the perfect snack for anyone who's trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. Monk Pack Keto Granola Bars and Nut and Seed Bars contain 1 gram of sugar or less, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and each bar contains 150 calories or less.
Yeah, I love these. Monk Pack bars have an amazing chewy texture and come in delicious flavors like sea salt dark chocolate, coconut cocoa chip, and caramel sea salt. The coconut cocoa chip, for instance, is my favorite and reminds me of like the soft granola bars we had as a kid. They're perfect for a quick breakfast, a snack between Zoom calls, or as a guilt-free, decadent dessert. By shopping online, you can avoid another trip to the grocery store and have Monk Pack delivered right to your door. These bars are not just for people eating keto. They are a great snack for anyone looking to reduce their sugar intake while still enjoying delicious, flavorful snacks. I've been working from home lately, more of a sedentary lifestyle. It's nice to have something healthy and quick that I can kind of grab.
Yeah, it's a nice quick snack. You don't feel guilty. It's like almost like a treat sometimes. You can use it as a dessert. My favorite is probably, you know, I love peanut butter and dark chocolate, and that's probably my favorite one.
In addition to being keto-friendly, the bars are also gluten-free, plant-based, and non-GMO, with no sugar, alcohols, soy, or artificial colors.
Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering our code CUPODCAST at checkout, or just click the link in the description down below to get 20% off. Monk Pack is so confident in their product that it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. So get some yummy, healthy bars. Go to monkpack.com and use our code CUPODCAST to save 20%, or click the link in the description below. Get going. Ian, we got voicemails, don't we? You go to Anchor.
We do.
You go to anchor.fm/CUPODCAST. You
go. I don't know why. I feel like this has been we've been going at a good clip today.
It's only an hour 24. It's like you're like struggling, but you know we're like way ahead of schedule.
No,
for
I know.
This week. We should do it every Monday. No,
I'm not struggling. I just stayed up too late playing Final Fantasy.
Really? Which one?
Seven Remake.
Seven Remake?
Yeah, I got it for PC because it was on sale, and I cranked the graphics settings up, and it's a gorgeous game.
All right. Well, you're gonna go. You're gonna leave us voice messages, and hopefully, you know, they're entertaining.
Hello, this is Alex from the one and only Jacksonville, Wyoming. I've been a long-time listener since about 2016, and I love the podcast. So I just want to say thank you, guys. Keep up the good work.
Oh, okay.
Hey, thanks.
Quick and easy if you're going to, you know.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Jason from the Nerd Cave Retro Show. You guys were talking about not being able to get good deals at the flea markets anymore for video games, and I've noticed the same thing, so I started collecting VHS tapes. They're really easy to find these days. I like to go for things like horror movies and science fiction movies, things that weren't really given a good DVD treatment. Or you can find good collector's items, collector's editions like Evil Dead, where you get like booklets and stuff with them. What do you guys think about that? Love the show. Keep doing what you're doing.
Look at these VHS collectors trying to pump up the market, trying to get it out there. Well, I see what you're doing. I have no interest. Here's the thing. If I was going to be a movie collector, that's different to me. Like you said, oh, we're going to find a sci-fi film that never was put on DVD. You get the VHS. That's actually kind of cool to me. But like the vast majority of the VHS you go and find are stuff from like the 90s and 2000s, and they're trash.
I think like 80s VHS collecting is interesting because that's where you're probably still going to find a lot of the stuff that never made a transition.
Or maybe the art was better back then.
Sure.
It wasn't as cheap. But like, I don't think that's why a lot of these people are getting into this, at least now. I talked to someone at Too Many Games. It's like, hey, Pat, thanks for talking about VHS tapes. Now people are buying them because you guys talked about it. Just to get into it, get in early. I think that's the thing. It's like, if you're getting in for the love of it, I have no problem of anything. But it's like, when you say, like, why didn't you do it? It's like, because I don't have any interest in it. I'm not going to click something, Ian, just to say, well, it might be something cool in the future. I just don't have the time or space or need to do it.
Yeah.
I'm sort of collected out at this point. We got our things, like, Ian has his LPs and games. I have games and, like, toys. And that's basically... That's it.
Some people have balsamic vinegar.
Some people have balsamic vinegar, which sounds like you should have taken the invite and gone up, Ian.
I could have done some bread and oil tasting.
Hey, you had a scheduled interview with good old ex-CEO, and you could have done that at some point.
Hey, did you guys ever see that movie Beverly Hills Cop? Please let me know.
Yes. It's yes. Great. Beverly Hills Cop. Fantastic. The first one. The second one is... then they're doing a fourth one.
I like the theme park scene where he's hanging from the Ferris wheel
with Bronson Pinchot showing up again. The first one is like not a classic, but it's great.
That was good.
Help vault Eddie Murphy. Famously, Stallone like backed out last minute, like 2 weeks before filming, whatever it was, and they got in Murphy and then rewrote the entire script on the fly to account for. I think Murphy's a slightly different actor than Stallone, and obviously it's better for it. It's a great movie. The first one. That was when Murphy blew up. He keeps coming back to this. He was so fucking young when he did those movies.
Yeah, he was like 18 or 20. Yeah, he was very young. He was like 18 when he started on SNL, I think.
Yeah, 18, 19. So like he blew up when he was so young.
Yep.
He's only in his like mid-50s now. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, every time I see him, I'm like, how do you still look like that? Oh, because you're not actually old. That mustache just made you look older
like
than you were.
He's 58 or whatever. He's not that old. Next one.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Ian. Stefan from Arizona here. Stefan. Long-time listener, second-time caller. I have one question for each of you. You both can answer them, but they are slightly tailor-made for the both of you.
Okay.
Ian, what is your favorite PS2 Atlas game, be it published by them or developed by them, and whether it's your favorite right now or of all time? Pat, what games do you feel will be less known about nowadays if they weren't associated with certain YouTubers? To give two specific examples, I feel like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde on NES would probably not be as well known if it weren't for its relation to, you know, James Rolfe's AVGN. And I feel like Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat probably wouldn't be as well known if it were not for you two. Cheers, guys.
I'm not sure why I said that. I never heard of that game before.
For me, it would be Stella Deus was a strategy RPG that was published by Atlas on the PlayStation 2. I adore it. I thought the graphical style was great. It was a pretty straightforward strategy RPG that didn't get bogged down in a lot of mechanics. And the characters were good. And there was hidden characters and stuff like that. It was fantastic.
I mean, he took the one I was going to say. No one would have heard of that game besides hardcore, you know, NES fans and collectors. Man, that's the one. It's even like the one game he always calls back because of that. It was like the iconic early one that, like, it's so weird and bizarre. And, you know, we even called back to it in the combat video.
Sure. I feel like a lot of the later releases probably wouldn't have been, like, Panic Restaurant. You know, something like that would not have probably been as well known if it weren't for people talking about it. Little Samson, I think, is almost entirely known at this point because of, you know, early YouTubers talking about it. When I was collecting NES, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, that was never a game that came up.
Did you see my Panic Restaurant video before I came out here?
No, I saw it after you came here.
Okay. Wonder how Allison's doing. She was great in those videos. She put up with my garbage and didn't even mean the balls for real. On the Google 13 video on take number 2, I believe. So I used that take.
Nice.
Nice that you need me in the ball. Nice.
Nice.
Next one.
Hello, Pat, Ian. This is Mike from Raleigh, North Carolina. Just want to say I've been a fan of the podcast for a long time.
Thanks,
Mike. And I was watching an old episode, and I noticed that Ian has an adult with a period sticker on the back of his laptop. Ian, what other electronic bands are you into? I'm heavily into Detroit techno, so you can pretty much go through that genre lineup and you'll find some of my favorite artists. Awesome to Chicago house, industrial, electro, drum bass, name it, and I'm into
it. What the
hell? Anyway, keep up the good work, and thank you. Bye.
You in the bar, in the barn somewhere with like crickets? What was that chirping?
Yes, I love electronic music. It's pretty much been the main form of music I've listened to since the early to mid 90s. Adult is great. They're fantastic live. In that sort of vein, I really like Contravoid. I like Spike Hellas. I like Trust. I would absolutely recommend people listen to Trust. So yeah, tons of it.
Who's that cute cat in the spacesuit?
I don't know. I think I got that from Helen, actually.
Oh, I haven't spoken to Helen a bit.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Nick from Richmond, Virginia. I had a question about video game parties. I hosted a video game party a couple of years ago, and I want to host one again soon. But I was wondering if you guys have ever done something like that, or hosted a party that's centered around playing video games.
I don't think I have before. I've done the board. Everyone's done the board game night. Mm-hmm. Everyone's done the board game night. I don't know if I ever had a, hey, come over, let's play Wii Sports, or been to a. I've talked about how when I first moved here, how the Wii was still so hot in 2009 and 10, how I went to parties with younger people and it was like wine flowing, drinking, and then playing Wii bowling. That was the thing. But that wasn't design. It was just something to do, while you're drinking.
Yeah.
I
don't think I ever really did, because when friends would come over, throwing on a multiplayer game was just kind of something that, mm-hmm. happened. We didn't need to plan a specific party for playing video games, because we'd all hang out on Sundays and play games anyways. I guess nothing wrong with it, it's fun, but yeah, I just don't think I ever went out of my way to plan that specifically.
Hey Pat, hey, and it's your boy Lamco 64 from Nottingham, UK again. Just listening to your new episode where you're talking about anachronisms in movies and TV shows, referencing the Stranger Things episodes. This is a massive pet peeve of mine. Really bugs me when you see somebody blatantly playing a Game Boy Advance or something, and you're getting stupid Pong/Atari noises coming out of it. Can you think of any particularly egregious examples of this? I'll mention one that you didn't spot from Stranger Things, or didn't mention that you spotted. You can actually hear in the arcade on it E. Honda laughing.
Yes.
About 8 years too early on that one.
No, yeah. I heard that.
'86. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Lamco. Yeah, I heard that. When it's sound effects, that's just, they're trying to fill the air. I don't mind that. It was like, ho, ho, ho. It was in the episode.
I don't have any specific examples, but that always annoyed me too, how even in the late 90s and mid 2000s, it's really only been since maybe 2010 on, where we start getting remotely accurate representations of video games and things like movies and sitcoms, instead of this big unwieldy controller that no one would ever use, with beeps and bloops coming out of it. And video games always look rough in 90s TV.
I like when the video games are showing up on Knight Rider.
Oh,
sometimes he plays an Atari game on the screen while kids drive for him. And then there's some arcade games that are in the background here and there, in the bars and stuff. It's like, oh, what is that? What is that game? Trying to look for one. It's like a lost game that's on a set that was on a set in 83. I think it's interesting.
Hey, guys, this is Calico from California. I'm just curious if you played any older games on older game consoles. So that would be the Dreamcast, even the original Xbox or PS2, the GameCube, even the X-Lynx Kai or the RAMnet. I know for me, I've been playing a lot of Phantasy Star Online version 2 on the Dreamcast on private servers. It's not the same, but I never really got the original experience. Love the podcast, and I love Extra Napkins. Thanks.
No, the only thing I ever did was I think I just used to play when the emulators had built-in net play for NES or Super. That's all I've ever done.
So what was the question again? It was,
have you played any older game consoles online?
Yeah, I have, but I played the Dreamcast.
Back in the day or now?
Yeah, that I'm not certain. Oh. I've always wanted to play Phantasy Star Online version 2 on an actual Dreamcast now, because I know there's still people who do fan servers, so I'd maybe look into that. Back in the day, I definitely played, Dreamcast games online. That was one of the things I loved about it, was the first system with some real online support, but I haven't gone back to any, really.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Jason from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, longtime fan of the podcast and of Friendly's Restaurants.
Yeah.
And this question is for Ian. I have been really into these mini arcade consoles lately and playing a bunch of them and a bunch of shooters. So my question is, which of these bullet hell shooters that I suck at but for some reason can't stop playing do you think is better? Taito's Darius Gaiden or Neo Geo SNK's Blazing Star? That's it. Keep the good work. Thanks, guys.
Ah, I love both of them. I don't know that I'd consider either of them bullet hell, but they're both really, really good shooters. I really like Blazing Star. I do a lot, but it's one of those ones that never grabbed me, I guess, as much as I was hoping it would. Meanwhile, I love Darius Gaiden. I love the art in it. I love the weird, you know, fish-themed enemies. So while both are good, I would give the edge to Darius Gaiden.
Well, I got a game for you called Deep Blue, if you're into the fish shooter genre. The huge fish shooter genre.
That game came into Luna like three times, and I just kept passing on it.
You got Deep Blue. You got Scoon.
In the Hunt.
In the Hunt? Never heard of that one.
In the Hunt is another submarine shooter by Irem that came out in the 90s.
But how many are you an actual fish? Like Deep Blue.
Yeah.
An actual fish. Shoot another fish. It's so bizarre.
It is fucking
I'll do a few more. I'm having fun. We're getting done early.
Hey, guys. It's Daryl from Buffalo again. Daryl. Up here in Buffalo, we have a certain retro store that likes to put green labeled stickers on their games. Sometimes they put them on labels, sometimes they put them on the boxes and so forth. They're a real pain in the butt to get off. Ian probably figures what store I'm talking about. Here's the issue with this. They've been putting them on the labels and damaging the labels and so forth of the games.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell a store, hey, don't do that, but... You know, like there's other parts of a cart usually you can put the label. That's not the art, you know. I've seen on boxes where they use something else where it's like a harder sticker on like not a sticky, but something like a sticky where it comes off easier so it doesn't damage.
What we used to always do is the labels that we had were easy remove.
Uh-huh.
And on like, you know, PS on DVD case games, you know, they just get slapped right on there.
Sure.
With NES games, why would you put any cartridge game? Why would you put it on the label? There's all sorts of places on there, like bare plastic, that you can put those labels. With boxes, it depends. If you want to spend the money and get protectors for all your box games, and most of them are not worth that kind of treatment, you know, you can put it right on there. What I used to do, and no one ever complained about it, I'd hang the sticker off the side. Basically, I'd use, if the sticker is this big, I'd use like 2 millimeters of it and just, it looks like a little flag flying off the side. You pick it up, you just pop it off, and that's it.
And for the most part, you were good to go.
No one ever complained. I never saw a box damaged that way.
Gotcha. Do like two more.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. It's Peter from Delaware.
Hey, Pete.
Recently, Ian talked about how he gets to your house about 45 minutes before you start shooting. So I was just curious, like, what the ritual is like once Ian gets to your house and until you start shooting. Like, you guys fist bump, chest bump it out.
I am not chest bumping Ian.
Offer some refreshments. What's going on? Thank you.
It's usually, I don't think you ever said 45 minutes. It's usually over an hour,
yeah,
at least. Sometimes it's an hour and a half. Sometimes it's two, depending on what we have to do and prepare. There's like a ritual, but it's not exciting.
If it's 2 hours, it's because you're puttering around.
Wow. Yeah. Show preps puttering. Thanks, Ian.
Pat sits on his computer and checks to see if there's new stuff that we need to talk about. I sit down here, I open up the topic list, and there's usually one topic that I didn't give enough attention to, so I read over it. I usually slam a Diet Coke. It's a tall boy today. I usually bring 2 Diet Cokes and a polar water. I usually slam 1 Diet Coke.
Which brings me to Ian's bathroom breaks. Yeah. Usually just 2 before the podcast. And usually I'm ready to go, all right, and then Ian just walks out when I'm like literally ready to start.
I do that at the movie theater too, though. It's piss panic. I get piss panic.
I'm literally like, all right, let's go. And like, Ian's already gone.
Well, because I don't want to have to go in the middle. So like, when it's movie theater time, I go and I pee when we get there. And then we sit down. And when I'm sure there's like 1 preview left, I get up and I go.
So you do
again.
A second pre-pee just in case.
I do a second pre-pee just
a
in pre-pee. Case.
A pre-pee. Yeah. That's funny as hell. But yeah, that's happened a lot where I'm like, all right, ready to go. And then Ian's just not here. And I'm
sometimes
like,
it's kind of amusing. So maybe sometimes it's comedic timing.
For me, so I'm frustrated. I'm already frustrated enough sometimes. Sometimes we have technical issues that, you know, I'm like not ready to throw things, but it's like weird shit I can't figure out. Sometimes it's Discord issues. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens sometimes beforehand. And we have to do our sponsors, our advertisers that love us. We have to do those. We have to, you know, promote good old Monk Pack, save using code CU podcast or
Tasty Bars.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Get your Tasty Bars.
Well, we have to do that.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Z-Mangs in Japan. A while back, you were asking about Ninja Gaiden OVA. There actually is a Ninja Gaiden anime that aired in Japan. It's like 40 minutes long. You can watch it on YouTube.
Okay.
There's also a Salamander, aka Life Force, anime to enjoy.
Neat.
Recently, I've been noticing mostly musicians, but a few YouTubers being annoyed about having to use social media to promote their art, you know, their music or videos or whatever. For me personally, as someone who does do YouTube, I think a promotion via Twitter or Instagram or TikTok to be an extension of my art. So I was just wondering how you guys feel about having to use social media to promote yourselves, and what are your thoughts and your strategies of promotion? Anyway, guys, love and peace. Hopefully you can come to Japan soon.
Oh, thanks. I mean, without social media, less people know about you. So to me, it's like it's part and parcel of what you do. I mean, if without social media, how are you going to promote what you're doing? How are people going to know about it? To me,
yeah, it's just the modern way of doing it. I'm bad at promoting myself and what I do, but I don't. A lot of the people I follow on Twitter are artists because they're on there promoting their art. And it's an easy way to be like, I want to look at some art from this artist and click them and go through. I want people to promote the cool shit they're doing. I follow these people because some of them are my friends, but I follow a lot of people because I just want to know what they're up to.
The days of like the individual websites is over.
Yeah.
People just have like, I have like a link tree sort of thing that you go there and you can access my web store there, my Instagram, my Twitch, you know, Twitter, Facebook, like that's what people have at most. That's all you need. You don't need to have your own individual site unless you're doing like, you know, like long form blogs and shit like that. Well, even that there's separate sites for, right? You used to do the question and answer thing. That was a separate thing. But you can all just have like there's other things besides Linktree. Some people don't like Linktree. I think some people don't like that. I think their politics is weird. I gotta look into it. But like there's a bunch of sites where it's just like, oh, here's all my shit. Here's my contact. Here's all my crap. So I don't see it. I mainly use my main account just for promotion, just because I don't like getting bogged down on Twitter. And whenever someone tries to have a conversation with me, there's a 50% chance it's in bad faith sometimes, where I'm just like, this is a bad faith conversation. They just want to argue with me. That's not worth my time. And that comes with the territory. Once you gain a certain amount of followers, I get that. So in general, for me, social media is like, oh, let's just read it and look at cat memes and cute pictures, look at zoo creatures. But in terms of the interaction, I try not to get bogged down in it too much, unfortunately. All right. So we have to have someone check in with us. The Amico has come to a close by and large, besides maybe bankruptcy hearings, whatever drama, selling it off into pieces. So it seems that, you know, there's been less to talk about. And I think a certain CEO thinks that, you know, maybe time has been wasted. So you got the word that, you know, there's going to be this might be it. This might be it for someone checking in with us.
It might be.
Hello, Pat. Hello, Ian. This is a very hard call for me to make, but it had to be made. I shan't be calling into this show anymore. And I'm sorry I ever started, because no one understands me. I should really be in an emo band, and I think everyone knows it would be the greatest emo band that ever existed. But I've wasted too much time calling you, and it's time to get back to what I am a master at. I have nothing left to say to any of you besides what I'm going to say in this song. I may say you're gaming racists, but you're not the only ones. I hope someday you'll buy my Amico so I can take all your money. Please give me your money. Please. Getting way behind on those Sega Channel payments. Thank you.
Fare thee well, Tommy. Fare thee well.
Good luck on wherever life takes you, Tom.
We'll see you down the road.
It's been a legendary run, Tom.
And that's it for this CU podcast.
That's it. I don't got a whole lot more to say. We're ending on an emotional note.
Well, a little emotional there at the end.
It's a little emotional.
I told myself I wasn't going to cry.
Yeah.
But, this has been a fun one.
It has.
We'll be back to Tuesday next week, unless Ian has a follow-up on Monday, on the Tuesday.
No.
And then again, I'll be in South Carolina this weekend. And then fucking 5 weeks from now, 5 weeks? 6 weeks. 5-6 weeks, we'll be in Long Island already.
Yeah, that's right. I'm looking forward to it.
We're already in the dog days of summer, almost. We're getting there. Once you get to, what's the dog days of summer? Like late July, middle July?
I would say August is what they...
Dog
like,
days?
Like, yeah. Like see, first 2 weeks of August.
See, to me, peak summer vacation was always 4th of July. Like, that's like you get the fireworks, you get the barbecue. And then once you get to August, I always say it was the worst month of the year because it was the dread of going back to school.
Yeah, July was a treat every year. But yeah, August, first couple weeks, okay. The first week, but once you get down to those last 2 weeks, you don't want to fucking do anything.
No. June to me was always the best because I used to get out of school early June. Like,
we used to get out June like 23rd or something. And then our break would be till we'd usually go back after Labor Day.
Oh, okay.
So we'd go back like the day after Labor Day.
Well, I usually did that, but like we were out by like June 10th. We were out. And then high school was about that, like first week and a half of June. Senior year of high school, going to Catholic high school, was like you were out by mid-May. They got your ass out early. They didn't want the seniors around causing trouble for some reason. But we were out. I remember that was nuts. It's like, oh, you're done by like May. I think it was like May 20th.
Yeah, that's
out.
Crazy.
May 18th, like they wanted you out. It was really interesting. Ah, they knew what grades you, they knew what grades you had. They got through the finals quickly. It was almost like academic at that point. It was like, yeah, we know what you are. We don't have to put you through like the hellscape of all these. You still had finals, but I remember senior year in high school being kind of weird because of that. It didn't feel the same.
Right? No, it didn't. Everyone just fucked off kind of early, and there was no like end date anymore.
And I hated it because I had the one time I had study hall, I had in sixth period. If it was seventh, I could have asked to go home early. Like you could have got permission. So I had sixth period. And looking back, I was like, yeah, I wasted it. But I was like, no, I'm going to relax. I got enough credits. I'm good in high school. I'm good. I was on the dean's list. I knew what was up. All right. That's it for the podcast.
We're done. Bye.
We'll see you later.